Welcome everyone to the Inside the 90 podcast, your home for everything soccer. And we're just going to talk about a little Arsenal today. It's going to be a great show. I got some great friends on the line. I got Justin, Mateen, and Mark. It's going to be a great time. It's going to be so much fun because we're talking about Arsenal, and Arsenal is the team that the last 2 years has been fighting back to the top tier, arguably, you know, the top four, and back in the Champions League. So without further ado, we're going to talk about the season so far, right? And the season so far has been, shall we say, not rough, but hasn't been as good as last year. But we're fighting back to the top. What do you think, Justin?
I mean, of course, last year was a season that none of us saw coming. I mean, I remember sitting here at Christmas during the World Cup break thinking, we're top of the league. I mean, I've never seen us. I mean, beginning of the season, alphabetically wise, yeah, we're top of the league. But like come December, I mean, it's just surprising. I thought we were actually going to do it for a while there. But I mean, you get a couple West Ham draws here and a couple, you know, bad performances here and there. It just kind of goes downhill. Leading into this year, I went and saw them play preseason at the in Washington, D.C. for the All-Star game versus MLS. Looked great, other than Kai Havertz missing every single, which I was concerned, but that's not been justified as of late. But, you know, season started off, you know, I didn't want to come into the season with high hopes like last year of coming out of the gate, just rushing right ahead. I kind of thought if we come out slower, more methodical, it might be a little bit better for season. Good results early. I mean, beating City is always, you know, that's a rare unicorn to happen. I mean, 1-0 off of a freak deflection, but still, I mean, it's points. Right now, I mean, I do think it's Liverpool in Arsenal's race. I think City, despite having De Bruyne back, is going to still have a lot of road to make up. So, I mean, I think we need kind of a good January transfer window. We need results Saturday. If we come out Saturday and get 3 points, we're good. If we get 1 point, I mean, it's not terrible, but it's better than giving 3 points to Liverpool.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the difference between this season and last season, obviously we were fast out of the tracks last year. And like you said, World Cup break, we were sitting on top of the world. But you know that it's a long season and eventually you're going to have a lull in performances. You're going to have a dip in production. And that happened, unfortunately. I think lucky for us for now, that lull came at the beginning where we were kind of struggling getting through these teams and, you know, finding a way to win and late goals here and there. But we have had some pretty statement wins. That Man United win with Declan Rice scoring essentially a winner with Jesus scoring at the end. The Luton Town game, finding any way to win. Kai Havertz coming back into form. I think these are all good signs. And the fact that we're top now is exactly where we'd want to be. Tell us at the beginning of the season you're going to be top in December, we'd bite your hand off. So I think at this weekend is definitely at a litmus test of, all right, where are we? Where are we actually? And if we, for some reason, don't show up, I think it can really take a downturn pretty quick because we know how this team can be sometimes. But if you get a draw or you get a statement win, you put in a good performance, things could really get in the right direction real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think what's been interesting is, you know, the Kai Havertz situation. And what I've noticed is that what wasn't said was at the beginning of the season, so many injuries, particularly on the left-hand side, he just wasn't given any time to settle. And now that's happened. Now he's getting a little bit more influence in the game because Declan Rice has been outstanding, but has settling and growing more into the team. Zinchenko and Martinelli playing out there, I think they're linking up very well. And I think that helps the general play with Arsenal. I think last year they came out of the blocks. It was the unknown. And I think they were winning games because teams really didn't expect them to be as good as they were. This year, there's been a little bit more understanding. So teams are sitting a little bit deeper. But I think if you look at the two defeats, you know, that we've had Newcastle and Aston Villa against Newcastle, you know, they didn't create enough, I don't think, to win the game. But there was a lot of, you know, contentiousness with the goal and, you know, whether that was a real goal, should have been called a foul out of play. You know, so that was unlucky, I think, against Aston Villa. I thought they played very well against Aston Villa. But once again, giving up, you know, a silly goal early on means you're chasing the game. And I think what Arsenal have shown in general is that they are actually better at controlling the game and not giving up, you know, early mistakes. And that seems to be growing in the season. So I think the weekend, you know, if you remember rightly, last year we went there, went 2-0 up very early on and allowed Liverpool to come back and actually held on for a draw where I think that was fortunate. We could have lost that game very, very easily. I think this year, I think you're going to see a different style. I think you're going to see a very close game. I don't expect to see lots of goals, which is unusual for Arsenal, Liverpool, particularly at Anfield. But I think you're going to see that Arsenal can control the game a lot better. And I think we're actually going to win this weekend. That's my prediction.
So my thing is, I think that Arsenal have become kind of predictable. I think I was texting some people about this. Saka becomes very predictable. He's very left-footed, and teams have kind of adapted to him where they double up on the left and they force him to drop the ball to either Ben White or Odegaard or whoever comes to support. Usually Ben White hits the fake overlap or whatever and Saka gives it, or he just drops it. And I think teams have kind of adjusted to that. And I think that Arsenal having very good players that are good shooters from outside the box has definitely helped to support that. You know, throw in all three central midfielders into that role. Hell, you could throw in, you know, Thomas Partey, who is a very good outside the box shooter, because he had that curler last year that was just a gem. And I'm just looking forward to Martinelli smoking Trent on the wing again. That goal was pristine. I've watched that one over and over and over again. So my thing is this is the question I'll pitch to you. Do you think that Arsenal will be predictable on Saturday? Jurgen Klopp is a very good manager, especially at Anfield at home. Do you think Arsenal will become predictable?
I don't know. I mean, it kind of depends what formation, what players Mikel puts out there. I mean, I kind of think it's going to be the same formation as usual. But I mean, if he throws in Leo Trossard as a starter or Jorginho at center, it might be a little bit more of a chaotic thing. I do think we need to kind of not play the ball as much through Bukaya, because if he gets fouled the 8 times a game that he always gets fouled, it's going to be bad for his fitness. It's going to take him out of the game. It's going to be frustrating for the players. It just depends. I mean, if Arsenal can go out and realize, you know, Liverpool has been, they've had some bad games this year, just like us. Anfield is a tough place to go into and get wins. But I mean, if you can go in there and you can go in there with a mindset of this isn't a title decider just yet, this is just, imagine this as any other game, go in there, don't expect to blow the team out of the water 4-0, 5-0. Like Mark said, it's going to be a really close game. I think it might be an 89th minute winner, maybe stoppage time. I think it'll be chippy, but I do think if we play our cards right and don't become too predictable, as Kyle said, I think we might give Jurgen a headache and might steal some points.
Yeah, I think with the, it's who does he pick, right? One criticism, and how do you criticize a manager who's doing so well? But one criticism of Arteta that sometimes I have is he can overthink a couple things, especially in a big match, because it's a big match and he wants to do exactly what he thinks is the best to win. But sometimes you can overthink it. And I mean, we can talk about the goalkeeper thing all night, but we won't. I think if you start really starting to change your team up too much, you could put yourself in a really difficult position. Anfield is supernatural. Okay, weird things happen there. Weird games, weird score lines. I think last year we were cruising at 2-0, and I think it was Xhaka and Alexander-Arnold got into a little flare-up, crowd gets into it, and before you know it, it's a new game. Okay, I think stick to your guns. My biggest worry is Zinchenko defending, obviously, but who do we have
in place
of him? So we kind of have to use that. We have to manage with him and take his strengths in attacking. But at the same time, these guys are talented. They've got wingers who will fly at you. Mo Salah still is Mo Salah. And so it's that's my biggest worry out of everything over for the weekend. But yeah, I think it'll be close. And I think if quality comes through, I think we can get out of there with 3 points.
Yeah, I think there won't be any unpredictability. I think he will pick his, you know, probably what he believes his best 11, which will be the one that started last weekend. And I think you're seeing him, like watching Arsenal, you're right, Kyle, it is predictable, but it's like watching a game of chess. You know, it's almost like, you know, you can see where the next pass is going. It can be very slow sometimes, but I think they're just looking for the right time to pick a hole, or, you know, to get the opposition to step out and create some space where, you know, particularly the wingers can get in behind. So I don't expect to see anything different. I think it will be very controlled. I think at some point you're going to see, it's going to be if Martinelli can keep, you know, Trent Alexander back rather than more, you know, attacking wise. And I think that, you know, Declan Rice will be the key. I think that he's going to be the person that really controls their attacking options and breaks them down, you know, defensively. And you'll see, you know, Jesus with his movement, because I don't think Liverpool are particularly strong defensively. And I think that's probably the advantage that we have.
It's a good call. Good call. And so that kind of brings us into our next topic, which is Arteta and eventually the ownership of the Kroenke family, Kroenke Sports, backing Arteta. And I agree 100% that Arteta is, Mateen, as you said, that he is very methodical and he overthinks things. I agree 100%. And there's sometimes when I've criticized his substitutions. A lot of times his substitutions are spot on, but other times his substitutions are way too late in the game. And there's times when, like, games that we're chasing games and he's subbing in, you know, maybe an attacking midfielder and an extra, you know, offensive player, like an extra winger. Like, he'll have Martinelli, Saka, Jesus, and Nketiah all on the pitch, but he subs on those two extra players like at the 78th minute, 80th minute. Brother, we're chasing the game. Those subs should come earlier, you know, obviously depending on your game management, your time, all that kind of stuff. So I am critical of that. That's the only thing I'm really critical of is sometimes is his game management when it comes to late substitutions and how he overthinks things. But how has Arteta done overall? I think he's done actually pretty well. He's gotten a lot of criticism, especially over the, you know, two years ago with the, you'll never walk alone playing in the,
2 years ago, it was during the documentary season.
Yeah. So he got a lot of crap for that. But you know, as a manager, like, or as a coach, you know, I understand stuff like that. I don't know if he did it the right way or the wrong way, but, He's definitely doing a lot better, I thought. And I think that how he manages the game overall will depend on who wins.
I agree completely. When he first got appointed, I think a lot of people, I mean, up till last year, a lot of people looked at him and said, oh, well, he was coach, you know, he coached under Pep Guardiola. People thought he was going to be just like Pep. I mean, you know, mini Pep, you know, same tactics. And I think Mikel himself kind of got into his own head thinking, well, if I can kind of emulate what Pep did, but once he started going his own system and doing his own things and kind of adapted to our system, because he did inherit a broken Unai Emery team with the likes of Bernard Leno. And I mean, you had Torreira, a bunch of players who really honestly shouldn't have been at Arsenal. Once he started going to our academy players, you know, getting Bukayo up there, Smith Rowe, Martinelli, kind of developing these guys, kind of found his own. I think the biggest issue he had was a couple years ago was during the season they did the all or nothing thing. I think a lot of that was him trying to kind of give a glimpse into what his method of his madness was and kind of overthought it and kind of cost us points and getting top four for that Champions League place. Whereas last year came in with expectations. The bar was nothing last year. The bar was top four. And I mean, we damn near hit the stars with, you know, last year. Player selection wise, I think substitution wise, like you said, there's times he waits till the game is well past. I mean, it could be 0-0 in the 89th minute. You put guys and you should have had in the 56th minute in. The only complaint I have right now is this goalkeeper situation, which, like Mateen said, we can discuss all night till the cows come home, but it's just a matter of, I think it's a hard decision. I hate to see either one of the goalkeepers walk away because of not getting enough playing time. Do I think Mikel has been a success since he's come here? Absolutely. I mean, not because of the FA Cup, but because he's, you know, grinded out some really good results. He's beaten City, I mean, one time in the league, and I mean, he's beat them once in FA Cup. I mean, it's just, once Mikel realized he didn't have to be Pep Guardiola and realized, hey, I used to play under Arsene Wenger, I know how the system works, he kind of just, I mean, come into his own.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And kind of like Kyle, what you said with the substitutions, that is spot on, because I'm always screaming at my television when it's 79th minute and these strikers. Alex Ferguson used to say all the time that, how are my strikers going to score if they're sitting next to me on the bench? That's, I mean, you can't say it any better than that. You need to have your goal scorers when you're chasing a game, okay? Because they find a way to score. That's their job. That's what they do. So that's the one of the things. And I think, but recently, in recent time, I mean, with his substitutions, I mean, they've been pretty spot on. You see that as far as the results go. But has he been a success? I agree. He has. He absolutely has. I mean, you have to think, Arsene Wenger's been around for so long, and that's a major transition. And you had Unai Emery, and then you start kind of start fresh again. So the fact that 2 years in a row we're talking about, are we going to win the title or not? And it's 2023. I think that's we're doing pretty well. I mean, look at Manchester United, right? It's Alex Ferguson left, and it's back and forth. And now they're talking about, are they going to get rid of this manager? And it's just a merry-go-round. Would I want to be where they are? Absolutely not. I think we're in a great position, and I think we'll be even better moving forward for it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, you know, there's a lot of question marks over some of his decisions. Load, you know, bearing on the players, you know, until they're injured. You know, you look at the injuries even now that they've got, you know, that the question marks there are, has he overplayed them? Should he have rested players in, you know, not so important games, particularly the PSV game, you know, where we'd already qualified, top of the group, but he still put out a relatively strong team. But then you look at it and say, well, you know, we don't know what the analysts are seeing, you know, what the science is back there. You know, are the players able to play? You know, what are the injury status of some of these players? So overall, look where we were when he came in to where we are now. I think everybody would take that. Again, you know, using the Manchester United scenario. I think what's interesting, when we were talking about Unai Emery and how good a job he's now doing at Aston Villa, I do have this opinion that there are certain managers that are set for certain teams. And, you know, we look at Brendan Roberts when he was at Liverpool. I never rated him there. I actually thought he was, you know, probably he was punching above his weight there. And I think Unai Emery was the same. But I think that, you know, when Brendan Roberts went to Leicester, you know, did a great job there. You know, Unai Emery is doing a great job for Aston Villa. So there are certainly managers that are set for, you know, fifth place, mid-table teams. But if you look at the Arsenals, you know, and the top teams, Liverpool, Manchester United, Manchester City, they need quality coaches that can really not just coach the game, but also manage the players and put in their own footprint on how they want the team to play. And I think Arteta's done that an amazing job. You know, again, nobody would have expected us to be challengers last year, and we're certainly sitting up there looking like we're going to challenge again this year.
Yeah, nail on the head, 100%. I think I agree with, you know, pretty much everything that everyone said. I think that Arteta, he's very methodical. You can see the wheels in his head, you know, just turning. And he's got, you know, a pretty good staff. You know, they have the most set piece goals out of any team this year. I think they're at like 8 or 10, something like that, which is fantastic. They scored one last weekend as well. And I agree when it comes to the gamemanship. And, you know, we don't see the statistics and the numbers that say, hey, you have to play Saka every day for a minimum of 75 minutes or he won't do X, Y, Z. You know, his XG rating won't be whatever or whatever that is. So, like, 100%, I get it. And I've said, like, And it was, I think, who was it? Alan Smith said it the other day. I agreed 100%. Arteta is not known for playing young players, right? Arteta doesn't typically play academy players. And Justin, to your point, when Unai Emery was the manager, Saka was a left back. So, you know, and Arteta brought in, kind of coined Martinelli for what he is now, Arteta's definitely changed some things, but I think that a lot of what people want to see is how he's going to continue to change things into the rest of the season and the second part of the season. So we're going to move on to the January transfer window. There's a couple big names, and I'm sure you guys all know them, did your research, saw AFTV do their thing, whatever. So my question is, who are you watching and why?
Honestly, the last couple of weeks, I haven't really paid attention a whole lot to the transfer wire. I've heard a couple names thrown around there. I don't know. It's just one of those things where I don't think we need to get a massive amount of people into this team. I think the team we have now should be enough to get over the line. But I do think we need some guys for backup in case we run into the inevitable injury bug that cost us last year the title. I think getting, you know, Timber back very soon, getting Partey back very soon is going to be this massive boost. I mean, I wouldn't go out and break the bank trying to get anybody at January transfer window, but at the same time, I wouldn't sit on our hands idly and not, because there might come a time in March or April where we're staring down a Champions League quarter semi-final thing and we have the league in our sights and we let them slip because fitness is going to become an issue. Because, I mean, do I think we'll get far in the FA Cup and need fresh legs? Probably not. I think this year is more of a focus on how far can we get in the Champions League and win the league. So I think fatigue would kind of be the only thing I'd see get us get new players for, but I don't have anybody I would want to bring in. I mean, there's the names every single year people bring around. Like, it was years ago, it was, what the heck's his name? That Dustin Vlahovic, or the heck his name is, but that was a striker, but it was just like, yeah, but yeah. It's players that we've been kind of following for years have kind of fallen to the wayside because we don't need them. But to make it short, I don't know who I would add personally in January. I think we're decent depth-wise. So,
let's not forget, though, that January transfer window, the market's very high, and it's very hard to buy players, right? Players tend to sell, or their values tend to go up, obviously based on performance. But in January, they're exponentially high, because teams don't want to sell. I mean, was it Douglas Luiz, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, look what he's doing. You think Villa want to sell? But he's on Arsenal's top list. He's probably number three outside of, was it Ivan Toney and who's the other one? A couple of years ago, they're going after Lewis Dunk too. And Lewis Dunk had a pretty good game, all things considered, the other day. Besides the two errors, and he got absolutely megged by Martinelli. Oh, that was disgusting. But Martin, go ahead. January transfer.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, you said it. Arteta, there's no secret that he loves him some Douglas Luiz, and he's trying everything he can to get him. And I get it. The quality's there. And we need cover for Thomas Partey. I love Thomas Partey, but some players are just injury prone, and it's just one of those things. And when you're in a title run-in, or kind of like what Justin said, you're in a Champions League deep run, you need cover. And honestly, we're one Declan Rice injury, God forbid, knock on all the wood in the world, from things going in a direction we don't want to be seeing. So you need cover, but you're right. The market is skewed in January, because they know if you're out shopping, you're desperate. So you will pay, or you will need to pay. So I think they definitely need cover for Partey, whether it's Luiz. You want to get a Premier League tested player, in my opinion. You don't want to go out shopping out in the other leagues and say, all right, you have a few months to get adjusted and let's see what you can do. João Paulinho at Fulham is a solid player. I mean, I know he has links to Bayern and that kind of thing, but things can change. Those types of players, Lewis Dunk is a great one for center back. We need coverage in center back too. I mean, you look at the PSV team that he put out there, he rotated everybody except Gabriel and Saliba. What does that tell us? That those are our two guys and we don't have much else. So we need some sort of a depth there where we would feel comfortable that if something went down, and it happened with Saliba last year, that we have that cover. So I think that Ivan Toney, I mean, striker, we find a way to score. I don't think we're really missing that too much right now. I'd say your defensive mid and your center back, those are your areas where you need it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the issue is, as everybody stated, is the amount of money that a player is going to cost. I wouldn't be surprised to see one or two loan signings, probably experienced, you know, like a Jorginho, someone coming in that is probably not expected to be there on the short term, because I think most of the purchases will be in the summer. They've got to get rid of players to be able to do that as well. The financial fair play would be an issue. So who are they going to sell? Is he really going to try and get rid of Ramsdale, knowing that, again, any injuries could be an issue? Also, when we play Brentford again, Raya can't play in that game. So you're going to put your third string goalkeeper in that game. So I don't think Ramsdale will go. Smith Rowe, I think he'll go in the summer, but I can't see him going now. I think he's too important as a squad player. Cedric's the only one who's going to be going, and what are you going to get for him? Not enough money. And then you've got Nketiah, maybe, maybe not. You know, if they're going to get a striker, it would make sense, I think, for Nketiah to go. I think the problem with Nketiah is that he needs to be playing to, you know, score the goals that people want him to score. And they're not going to put him in if Jesus is fully fit. He'll come off the bench, but I don't think he's a bench goal scorer. He's not a super sub that's going to come in and make a difference. So I don't think you're going to see too much change this January. Again, I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of unexpected loan moves just to give some depth to the squad, but not too much else.
Yeah, and not only that, with the rumors of the FFP lurking around Arsenal as well, it's something to think about. I think Cedric is definitely on his way out. I think he's had one appearance this entire season. I think it was in the Champions League, or maybe it was in the
FA. Not too many.
One of the two. Yeah, not too many, all things considered. The keeper one's going to be interesting. And again, that's a dead horse argument. I think the whole thing, the reason why Douglas Luiz has been mentioned so much is because he's a more solid backup to Odegaard, I think. Because they've been talking about Smith Rowe, you know, jumping inside and playing that role. They've talked about Vieira, who I like. Vieira, I think he's a great player. He's very swift, very nimble, very intelligent. And I like Vieira. I think he's a good backup, but I think someone a little bit better might be good. And I think Douglas Luiz is kind of fitting that Kai Havertz, you know, role, that deep lying box to box midfielder who has that creative bite to him, so to speak. And Kai Havertz to me is more of a target man versus an actual ball player, so to speak. Hence, you know, he's kind of more of a poacher, even though he doesn't play the typical poacher position as like a striker would. And I think that, you know, there's been talks of, was it Zubimendi, I think was around there. Obviously the Ivan Tonys. Ivan Toney, even though he hasn't even played, his value is still 60 or 70, was it Euro, I suppose. I think it'd be interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if that Arsenal start going after younger players. Arsenal are notorious for going for younger players as well to continue to build up the academy. And maybe they promote from within because they've known to do that before. Hence, you know, Saka, Martinelli. I don't think they should spend too much because I think a lot of players will end up leaving in the summer. Let's not forget, you know, Kieran Tierney is also on loan, hasn't played at all the last, or was it season or so, played, you know, minimum time. So Kieran Tierney could be out the door again. So I just, you know, all those different players coming up on loan and they're returning, that could help us with the financial fair play.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's interesting is that if you look at the team, you know, Timber's not going to be back until March. So all the rumors that are around you know, that type of injury, there's no way he's coming back before then. If in an ideal world, if Partey was fit, I think particularly against Liverpool, but against the top teams, you'd see a mix of like Partey and Rice playing as holding midfielders, with probably Odegaard sitting in front. So having two deeper line centre midfielders in games like, you know, away at Anfield, away at the Etihad. But he doesn't have that option right now. The injuries that he's got to the squad means that, you know, as Martin was saying, like Rice is the only solid one. You know, right now Jorginho is injured, Elneny is injured. So we're really limited. So I really think that's the area that they will look to try to strengthen. Maybe somebody who can play centre back and as a defensive midfielder. But Luis, I think maybe in the summer, but I can't see Aston Villa letting him go in January. Not the way they're playing right now.
I understand the whole inverted fullback, right? I love it, and it took me a little bit to kind of understand the intricacies and how the formation kind of flexes with it. But I don't know what you guys think, but Zinny is a terrible defender. He is absolute crap. You know, he's fast, which is great, and on the ball he's relatively intelligent. Relatively, however, his defensive mindset is absolute trash. What was that? Two weekends ago, he gave the ball away like three times in the span of 10 minutes. I was flipping pillows over. I was so, like, you know, I was
also
furious.
Last year in Liverpool game last year, the game winning goal for that was, he lost track of Trent and just boop, headed it right in. So I mean, it's just, he kind of switches off the most inopportune times. I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised if Arsenal or Arteta tries to strengthen that as well. Now, granted, we have great defenders. Kvyar is a great player, and he's definitely come into his role. You know, let's not forget about, you know, Tomiyasu, who is a great player as well. You know, and then there's that whole experiment they tried to do with Thomas Partey. I think it was at right back, because they wanted this. Yo, that was rough. I was like, what is going on? And I understand the concept behind it, because he wanted a true defensive midfielder inside the defensive role. I get it, but it wasn't working. Even the commentators are like, what is going on? And Thomas Partey is like, I don't know what the hell to do. So I don't see that happening now. Zinchenko is a very good player, especially going forward, because for Ukraine, he actually plays in a center defensive role versus as a left back role. So he's very comfortable naturally in that center defensive position. And he's very good going forward. He's very intelligent on the ball. Again, he just kind of lacks some stuff. And I think in the next year or so, maybe not even in the summer, they're going to try to strengthen that again. So with that, we're going to go into a really cool game, really fun game. It's called This or That. And essentially what it is, I'm going to pitch something to you, and you pretty much say this or that, right? So you ready? We're going to do this. It's going to be fun. All right. Each of you get three. Okay. All right. So, and we'll go one by one. All right. Okay. So Justin, Mateen, and Mark, who did it better on the bicycle kick, Ronaldo or Rooney?
Oh, well, I mean, a lot of people would say Ronaldo, because people think he's just God's answer in any kind of football. But I mean, Wayne Rooney, just the way
against,
he hit
against City,
just, oh God, yeah. I mean, situation of it happening, I got to give it to Rooney.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and I was watching that live. I mean, I saw them both live, but I think just the magnitude of the Rooney one in a Manchester derby winning goal, that sort of thing, was unreal to watch. As a neutral, watching that is just unreal. Ronaldo's Ronaldo. I mean, we're not surprised he does something spectacular, but I got to go Rooney.
Yeah, I mean, Rooney's was incredible. But I'm going to go the opposite. I'm actually going to say Ronaldo. I think that technically he is just, you know, I think he's the second best player. You know, I think Messi is, you know, the best player out of the two. But Ronaldo technically is outstanding. So Ronaldo is my choice.
Beautiful. I love the twist. Okay. In their prime, that's a good one. This is a little older. don't know if you guys watch this. In their prime, who would you rather watch? Inter or AC Milan? Oh, I didn't even answer my last one. By the way, I agree. Rooney's was better because it was against City and it was a derby match. It was stupid. For this one, I'm going to go to AC Milan in their prime with Kaká, Ronaldinho.
I have to agree. AC Milan, I mean, Ronaldinho, I mean, that's one of those names. I mean, nowadays, I mean, everyone's, oh, Messi, you know, oh, Ronaldo. People don't put enough remembrance on the name Ronaldinho. I mean, the man was a legend and still is. I mean, he doesn't get enough praise, I feel like.
Yeah, you know, Edgar Davids, Dida.
Yeah, just think, I agree, AC Milan. I mean, that's an easy one for me. I mean, that team that lost to Liverpool in the Champions League final in 2005, that was one of the best football teams I've ever seen to play. Kaká and Shevchenko and Dida in goal and Maldini, Nesta, all these guys who were at the best in their positions with Carlo Ancelotti as their manager. I mean, it was just something incredible to watch. So, yeah, I got to go AC Milan.
Completely forgot about Shevchenko.
Yeah. What a striker. AC Milan.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Man, we're going through these. All right. This is a good one. Hear me out. All right. I forgot how to word this. All right. Who would you rather watch? Would you rather watch Leicester City climb to the top and win the cup? Or would you rather watch Wrexham?
What cup? We talking like EFL? We talking like any kind of like major European competition?
Right. So Leicester obviously won the EPL, right? So would you rather watch Leicester get promoted and win the cup, right? Because they won the cup like the next year or the year after that? Or would you rather watch Wrexham climb up?
I mean, it's people feel like this is because of the Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney buyout, but Wrexham, going to that show, I didn't know a whole lot about the village of Wrexham, but I mean, they're a city that, I mean, oldest football stadium in Europe. And I mean, I learned that through the show, and it's just, I mean, I feel like Wrexham's a team that last year, them and Arsenal kind of had that little thing where it was like, oh, well, these teams that, you know, historically haven't reached the peak of success getting good. It just, I feel like Wrexham this year has enough to actually get up to another level, and one day they keep building. I feel they could get a European. I mean, they could get a, you know, Europa Conference Championship, Europa League. I mean, it'd be amazing one to see it win a Champions League, but I mean, it's hard to tell, but I mean, definitely Wrexham, 100%.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the whole story, the sensationalizing that they're doing with it, it brings you into it and you're invested. So, I mean, that's an easy one. You want to see them succeed because you want to say, hey, I was there when they were playing non-league football and now look where they are. So I think there's a dramatic component to it that it's as football fans for us, when we see it, at least for me, when I see it in the mainstream and I see people talking about it who don't even know that the World Cup is every 4 years, but they know that Wrexham has a documentary. I think that's interesting to me. So I got to go Wrexham. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Leicester have already won it. You know, they won the Premier League. People were happy that, you know, an unknown team almost won it. But it's almost like they're now like forgotten. Wrexham, I think, is the TV show, the support is now making the marketplace over here even more, you know, falling in love with this sport because they now see, you know, that there's smaller teams out there that have got so much connection to their town, their city, their villages, and the way the fans are. I think that, you know, that's a huge plus for the sport. So Wrexham it is.
Yeah, you guys all said it great, but I'm gonna flip it around on you. So I love the triumphant story of, you know, Leicester, right? Moreover, I love the story of the players of Leicester, you know, specifically Jamie Vardy, because he was playing in like the eighth tier at what, 29 something years old. And then obviously, guys, I think his first contract was like $1 million or $2 million, you know, estimated. And he broke the all-time scoring record. Was it, I think it was 15 goals in 13 games, something like that, roughly. And this is
obviously
at 2016. And watching him just absolutely dominate, and he had that goal. Oh, man, I wish I remember who it was. It was like 45 yards out, and he absolutely just crushed it. It was a great goal, but he reminded me why I loved watching players like that. They were ruthless, right? They were fast, intelligent, you know, and you know, that's what you need in a true number nine, right? The goal poacher. But he had every, he was fast, you know, and you know, he wasn't greedy. And watching, you know, all the other players that were on that team, you know, it's just, and half that team got bought up like the next season, two seasons after that. And then obviously we saw the, you know, decline of Leicester and hence where they are now. But it was still, everyone loves to see the story, right? The underdog, right? And it adds that much culture and flair to the game. But Wrexham's story is fantastic. And I wish, I hope they do great. They're in second, I think, right now. And so they're continue to do well. And I think that as long as the, you know, the docuseries fuels their pockets, they're going to keep on doing it. I mean, why not? I mean, they're doing the exact same thing. And you know, when it comes to this kind of stuff, especially when it comes to sports and sports culture, that's revenue, that's tourism, that's a number of different things. So I'm glad to see it. So, all right. So that's it, man. That's a wrap. Final words. Come on, you Gunners.
Yeah. Definitely come on, you Gunners.
Come on, you Gunners. We need a big result on Saturday.
Big result. Big
result. All right. So let's end it with this. Our results going around. Brian, you can't talk.
Like I said earlier, I don't know. Like Mark said, I think it's going to be not a whole lot of goals scored. I think it's going to come down to last 15 minutes of the game. I'm going to go 1-0 to the Arsenal off of, call me crazy, a Kai Havertz just absolutely out of nowhere goal.
Interesting. Okay. I really want to go the route of this is going to be a tight game. And I want to convince myself, but I don't see that. It's Arsenal-Liverpool. There's not going to be much defending happening. Liverpool doesn't defend much, and we'll get sucked into it. 3-2, I think Arsenal win. Gabriel from a corner to win it in the 89th. That's what I want.
Gabriel Magalhães?
Yes, from a corner. I need it. Let's do it.
Yeah, I said earlier 1-0. I stick by that. And I think Jesus has scored a winner.
All right, cool. So I'm gonna go 2-1 as well. I think this is gonna be a trenches game. I think Arsenal are gonna try to spread the field very much and expand the back line of Liverpool as best they can. I think Arsenal definitely had the advantage. I think when it comes to that, I think also given prior history and the games leading up to this, I think endurance might take a toll as well. You never know with these kind of games. So I appreciate you guys coming on. This is the Inside the 90 podcast. We're talking about soccer. We're talking about culture. We're talking about Arsenal. Thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.